you remember yesterday, as we moved into the book of Proverbs, we noted the father-son motif, this what we could call general setting for this first portion, the first nine chapters, in which there seems to be something of a duel between Lady Wisdom and Mistress Evil. This is the device by which the father seems to be teaching the son. And in chapter 3, where we stopped yesterday, we will pick up again at the 19th verse. All of this is still within the context of the father-son conversation, or the instruction by the father. At the 19th verse, beginning there, we follow through again with the father's instructions in regard to wisdom. The Lord by wisdom founded the earth. My son, let not them, that is, wisdom and understanding, depart from thine eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion. So shall they be life unto thy soul and grace to thy neck. We see, as we move through this section, that wisdom here, as we've already pointed out, is that wisdom which comes from God, and that wisdom which is primarily contained within His Word. But more than just the Word itself, it's the Word understood. It's the Word as it's taken to the heart and applied in the life. He gives some guidelines for righteousness in 27 following. Withhold not good from them to whom it is due. Say not unto thy neighbor, go and come again. Tomorrow I will give, when thou hast it by thee. Devise not evil against thy neighbor. Strive not with a man without cause. Envy thou not the man of violence, and choose none of his ways. For the perverse is an abomination to the Lord, but his friendship is with the upright. The curse of the Lord is in the house of the wicked. Much of this we recall from the prophets, the warning you recall the prophets gave over and over of Israel and her sin, the way in which they did not express their love to one another. Instead, they took advantage of one another, and the rich particularly wronged the poor and the helpless. Verses 32 to 33 and 4 here particularly remind us of Psalm 1, the house of the wicked, the path of the wicked, the way of the wicked, and also his scoffing. Then verse 35 again summarizes what Psalm 1 has said, the wise shall inherit glory, but shame shall be the promotion of fools. We should keep in mind, because certain sections of the Psalm of Proverbs will deal with the fool, the biblical meaning of fool, and we should not think of him as a clown, as so many times we do in today when we use the word fool. We think of some kind of a clown or someone who doesn't have good sense. But the biblical meaning of fool is different, and we need to keep this in mind, that the fool is one who acts as though there is no God, no one to whom he's accountable. Chapter 4, again, very clearly the setting of Deuteronomy 6 can be seen. Hear, my sons, the instruction of a father, for I give you good doctrine, forsake not my law, for I was a son unto my father, and he taught me. Let thy heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live, forget them not. Here, all of this is very close in its terminology to what we find in Deuteronomy 6. Then a brief personification of wisdom again, Lady Wisdom in verses 6 to 9. Forsake her not, she will preserve thee. Love her, and she will keep thee. Exalt her, and she will bring thee honor. She will give to thy head a chaplet of grace. Then again, verse 11 probably as beautifully or clearly as anywhere expresses this concept of the twofold parental leadership of children. I have taught thee in the ways of wisdom. I have led thee in the paths of uprightness. Clearly showing again what we've seen in Deuteronomy 6 and elsewhere, that parental duty does not end with teaching, verbal teaching, but also with a living example. Not only teaching the way of wisdom, but also going in such a way that leads to uprightness. 18 and 19 also remind us of Psalm 1. The path of the righteous is as the dawning light that shines more and more to the perfect day. The way of the wicked is as darkness. They know not at what they stumble. Particularly interesting to us is this section around verse 21. Keep them in the midst of thy heart. That is my words, the words of instruction, the words of wisdom. Ultimately, God's word. Keep them in the midst of thy heart, for they are life unto those that find them and health to all their flesh. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Now, I said that there seems to be somewhat involved in the setting here, the two women, as it were, vying for the heart of this young man, Lady Wisdom and Mistress Evil. And the exhortation of the father here to his son is, you guard your heart. Don't let it fall into the wrong hands. For out of the heart are the issues of life. Now, here the issues of life really means the things that really come out and produce the life that you live. The word issue here simply means that which flows out, that which comes out. And the concept here would be then that the whole matter is settled in your heart. And the kind of life you're going to live is going to depend basically on who possesses your heart. And we see this in clear harmony with other places in the Word of God. I think particularly of Jeremiah 17, 9 and 10, you recall the passage that notes the heart as God sees it, exceedingly wicked. The problem you recall in Jeremiah is that the heart must be changed. There can be no change in conduct, no real meaningful change in the people unless the hearts of the people are changed. But then think also of Matthew 15, the passage that the Lord speaks particularly clearly on the heart. And I think it would be worth our taking the time to just look at that passage, because it says much of what we have already noted here in Proverbs. Matthew 15:18, but the things which come forth out of the heart, which proceed out of the mouth, come forth out of the heart, and they defile the man. For out of the heart come forth evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, theft, false witness, railings. These are the things which defile the man. But to eat with unwashed hands defileth not the man. You probably remember the context here. The Pharisees were accusing the disciples of eating without having washed their hands in the ceremonial way that the Pharisees insisted they should. And Jesus was giving answer to this. And he was pointing out that the concern should be for their hearts and not so much for whether their hands were clean or dirty. The point is that the real person is the inner person, and that ultimately influences the whole life. What you are outside, what people see, is not necessarily what you are. But what you ultimately will be, that is, what will happen in your life, is determined by what is in your heart. And this is a lesson that the father teaches the son here. Therefore, the son is exhorted to guard it. Put away, therefore, a wayward mouth, perverse lips. Let your eyes look right on. Your eyelids look straight. Make level the path of your feet. Let all your ways be established. Remove thy foot from evil. Now, he's mentioned here the various parts of the body. As they express what is in the heart. What you say, your lips are going to betray what your heart is like. What you look at with your eyes really determines or reveals what is inside your heart, what your heart desires. If you spend your time looking with your eyes at things that are corrupt and sinful, if you seek for these things, this indicates something about your heart. The way you go, the path of your life, the things you count as important, the directions and course of your life, all of these reflect the heart. And then he continues with a dissertation now on Mistress Evil in several verses that follow here in 5:3 following. The lips of a strange woman, you remember that she is called a strange woman in 2:16, drop honey. Her mouth is smoother than oil. In the end, she is as bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go to Sheol, to death, her steps to Sheol, so that she finds not the level path of life. Her ways are unstable. You can see immediately here a contrast with 4:23 we just read. Mistress Evil, note what she says, note where she goes. Remember that her paths lead to destruction. So the exhortation in verse 8, remove thyself far from her, come not nigh the door of her house, lest strangers be filled with thy strength, and thou mourn at thy latter end. Verse 14 is interesting in its expression, I was well nigh in all evil in the midst of the assembly and congregation. Here, the concept again of being near into the lurch of evil and into its grip. Drink waters out of thine own cistern, running water out of thine own well. Verse 17, let them be for thyself alone, let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice in the wife of thy youth. Now here, of course, and as we said all along, much of what is said here about the strange woman does certainly apply to the very threat of the harlot, or one who would seduce and draw any young man away to herself. And there is a literal sense in which much of the exhortation here can be applied directly to that warning against such a woman. But particularly and through and above all this, we should see this continual duel between the harlot here, representative of evil, and Lady Wisdom. Verse 18 reminds us of Malachi 2:14, which we have studied, the strong exhortation to be faithful to your wife and not to depart from her or to put her aside by divorce. Verse 20, why shouldst thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman? On into chapter 6, again, continual exhortations from the son, from the father to the son. Verse 6 following are particularly directed against laziness. Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. Verse 9, how long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as a robber. A strong warning here against slovenness and sluggishness on our parts. Hard to say at 8 o'clock in the morning. Again, seems to have relationship to what we saw in 4:24-27 about the heart and the relationship of our eyes and our hands and our feet to our heart. Note there begins, there are six things the Lord hates, seven which are an abomination: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked purposes, feet that are swift in running to mischief, a false witness that utters lies, and he that sows discord among brethren. Here again, the heart and the outward actions and their relationship, that ultimately the corrupt heart will control the way we live. Now, the preventive to that is given immediately afterwards, and it's just as we were given in Deuteronomy 6. My son, keep the commandment of thy father, forsake not the law of thy mother, bind them continually on thy heart, tie them to thy neck. When thou walkest, when thou sleepest, when thou awakest, the commandment is a lamp, the law a light, to keep thee from the evil woman, from the flattery of the foreigner's tongue. Lust not after her beauty in thy heart. Here again, evil personified as a seductive woman. The adulteress hunteth for the precious life. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Verse 29, so is he that goeth in to his neighbor's wife. Whosoever toucheth her shall not be unpunished. Then chapter 7 continues the description of Mistress Evil. Verse 4, say unto wisdom, thou art my sister, and call understanding thy kinswoman, that they may keep thee from the strange woman. Again, you see the dual here. Be faithful to the one and reject the other. Verses 6 to the end of this chapter, basically, give to us a very interesting picture of seduction and of a young man being lured into her house. At the window of my house, I looked through my lattice and beheld among the simple ones, and discerned among the youths, a young man void of understanding, passing through the street near her corner. He went the way to her house in the twilight, in the evening of the day, under cover, so to speak. And there met him a woman with the attire of a harlot and wily of heart. She is clamorous and willful, and her feet abide not in her house. She is in the street. She caught him and kissed him, and then the description of how she seduces him or leads him into the house and has the place prepared there. Verse 19, all of this, 17, 18, and 19 remind us much of Potiphar's wife and her seduction of young Joseph. Then the end of her way is described in verse 27. Her house is the way to Sheol, going down to the chambers of death. Chapter 8 is given almost wholly to a portrait of Lady Wisdom and her call to young men. Does not wisdom cry and understanding put forth her voice? Where the paths meet, she stands beside the gates. At the coming in at the door, she cries aloud. You can see her here contrasted to the immediately preceding description of the harlot who stands and beckons to the man seductively to come to her. A Lady Wisdom also cries. She goes to where people are and she calls out to them, O ye simple, understand prudence. Ye fools, be of an understanding heart. Hear, for I will speak excellent things. The opening of my lips shall be right things. My mouth shall utter truth. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing crooked or perverse. And then a description of wisdom. Verse 11 following, wisdom is better than rubies, and so forth. Verse 7:13, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogancy and the evil way and the perverse mouth do I hate. Verse 17, I love them that love me, and those that seek me diligently shall find me. Verse 20, I walk in the way of righteousness in the midst of the paths of justice. There again, Genesis 18:19 is brought to mind, righteousness and justice, the paths that God would have his people to follow. Follow wisdom, follow that wisdom that comes from God, and that comes through his word, by his spirit, through his word, that wisdom alone is able to carry us as God's children through the world. Verse 32, blessed are they that keep my ways, blessed is the man that heareth me. And then verse 36, but he that sinneth against me wrongeth his own soul, and they that hate me love death. You're courting death when you turn your back on God's wisdom. Chapter 9 continues the picture of Lady Wisdom. Verse 3, she crieth upon the highest places of the city, whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. Again, a contrast to chapter 7 and the seductive ways of the other woman. Come, eat ye of my bread, verse 5, drink of the wine I have mingled. Leave off, ye simple ones, and live and walk in the way of understanding. Now, chapter 9, verse 10 gives us the closing bracket, so to speak, of this whole section, which is very much like verse 1, chapter 1, verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Now, you recall that knowledge is the thing that God required in Hosea, in particular, this emphasis to know God, to know Him. Well, we only know Him as we come to know Him through His revelation of Himself. The fear of the Lord, that is the trust in the Lord, then, is the beginning of wisdom. Then the whole section closes with one more description of Mistress Evil. The foolish woman is clamorous, simple, knowing nothing. She sits at the door to call to them that pass by. Whoso is simple, she says, let him turn in here. As for him that is void of understanding, she says, stolen waters are sweet, bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he knoweth not that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol. It's a rather chilling picture there at the end. She paints it so beautifully, and he goes in, not knowing that he's walking right into death itself. Her cry to the simple in verse 16 here is interestingly contrasted to Lady Wisdom's cry in 9:4. Whoever is simple, let him turn in hither. And so this is why I have tried to stress the fact that we do have in these nine chapters this jewel for the heart of the man. And it's pictured in terms of two women and their struggle, as it were, to bring the young man to them to capture his heart. Now we move into a new section in chapter 10, and even this section should rightly be divided into two parts. Chapter 10, 1 to 22, 16 is classified as the Proverbs of Solomon, but a subdivision might be also made, and the first part of it would be chapters 10 through 15. Chapters 10 through 15 deal with contrast primarily. The contrast between righteous and wicked and wise and foolish. And you see various terms used here. And in your outline, you note that I have pointed out here something of these contrasts, a series of contrasts. And I've noted 11. That's not altogether exhaustive. And I've given an example of each one just so that we might see what it is that is to be found in this section. Now, for instance, the structure is shown here in the first verse. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. And this conjunction but here is used predominantly throughout these chapters as a contrast, the good and the bad, so to speak. And the good and the bad are put in various terms here, various descriptions. And I've categorized them here primarily in terms of basic categories. The first basic category that I have noted is the wicked and the righteous. And I've given you an example here of 10, 2, and 3. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivers from death. The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish, but he thrusteth away the desire of the wicked. Here we learn, as we study these various passages that deal with the wicked and the righteous, we learn a great deal about how God deals with them and what they look like and how to define them. And so these are fruitful studies. And I think they can be most profitably studied in the various categories that I've suggested here, which I've only given you examples. Now, the basic category, as we've already seen among men, as God divides them, is the wicked and the righteous. The children of Satan and the children of God. This is the most primary and basic category. But there are others, other ways of expressing it. Let us put it that way. It can also be described in terms of the foolish and the wise. Now, we remember that foolish here means those who live as though there is no God. The wise, as we've already seen described in chapters 1 to 9, are those who fear the Lord, who trust in the Lord, whose lives are directed as fully convinced that God exists and that we are to do His will. And so, verse 1 and also verse 8, to give us examples of this. Verse 1, a wise son makes a glad father, a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Or verse 8, the wise in heart will receive commandments, but a prating fool shall fall. Then another way of dividing them are between the proud and the humble. Chapter 11, verse 2, when pride comes, then comes shame, but with the lowly is wisdom. There are many other proverbs like this one. Again, between the cruel and the merciful. In 11:17, the merciful man doeth good to his own soul, but he that is cruel troubleth his own flesh. Or another division between liars and truthful. We find an example in 14:5 of this. A faithful witness will not lie, but a false witness uttereth lies. Here are the characteristics of the two. Another category, those hasty in spirit and those slow to anger. 14:29. He that is slow to anger is of great understanding. He that is hasty of spirit exalts folly. Slow to anger reflects certainly a characteristic of God. The hasty of spirit, quick to judge, quick to condemn, exalts folly, the man who lives as though there is no God. Again, can be divided between the envious and the satisfied. There are many devices in a man's heart, but the counsel of the Lord, that shall stand. No matter what men plot, no matter what evil devices they may concoct in their minds or in their hearts, God's counsel will stand. What God has purposed, God will do. Or look again at chapter 20, verse 24. A man's goings are of the Lord. How then can man understand his way? Our 21, verse 1. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, as the water courses, he turneth it whithersoever he will. 21:30. There is no wisdom, nor understanding, nor counsel against the Lord. The horse is prepared against the day of battle, but victory is of the Lord. Now, the underlying truth in all of this that we are pointing to now, these passages, are that God is in control, and that if man is going to have any hope, he had better look to God. It's only God who has the power to bring to pass the things which he purposes. Man can't do it. Then the third basic point in this thesis is that man alone is unable to solve his problem. And I'll just give you one verse here. Chapter 20, verse 9. Who can say, I have made my heart clean? I am pure from my sin. Man's sinful heart, you see, brings him to trouble, brings him to tragedy, makes him to plot and to do that which is against God's will, and he can do nothing about it. His heart is sinful. He cannot cleanse it. He cannot make it pure. This, in essence, is what Jeremiah develops in his prophecy. So then, as a concluding point, number four, therefore, these things need to be done. Number one, we must commit our works unto the Lord. 16:3. Commit thy works unto the Lord. Thy purposes shall be established. The only way to be able to live a life in which what you purpose can be established is to commit your work, your life, your purpose, everything into the hands of God. Then with a cleansed heart, you see, with a heart that's brought into harmony with the will of God, you'll see the things that you live for, the things that you strive for, begin to be accomplished. Whatsoever he doeth shall prosper, as the psalmist says in verse 1. Again, in 16:6, there must be atonement. Sin must be dealt with. By mercy and truth, iniquity is atoned for. By the fear of the Lord, men depart from evil. Mercy and truth, that comes from God. Mercy, that's dependent totally upon God. Fear of the Lord, that is equivalent to trust in the Lord. The only way that evil can be dealt with then is dependent upon the mercy of God, the truth that God reveals, the way of salvation which God makes known, and that responding trust in the Lord, fear of the Lord, which we manifest. So again, in 16:20, we're exhorted to trust in the Lord. He that gives heed unto the word shall find good. Whoever trusts in the Lord, happy is he. This verse can be said to be a summary of many messages, like Isaiah's message, or Jeremiah's, or Habakkuk's. Trust in the Lord. Believe in the Lord. This is the only answer, the only way of escape from our problem of the sinful heart and man's inability to do anything about it. Again, it's expressed in terms of running to the Lord in 18, verse 10. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous runneth unto it and is safe. This too reminds us of Isaiah. You remember the refuge. Go to the Lord. He is the refuge in the time of trouble. Or, again, expressed in terms of fearing the Lord in 19, verse 23, chapter 19, verse 23. The fear of the Lord, again, let me remind you that in the Scriptures, fear of the Lord is equivalent to trust in the Lord. The fear of the Lord tends to life. He that has it shall abide satisfied. He shall not be visited with evil. Or finally, chapter 20, verse 22. Say not thou, I will recompense evil. Wait for the Lord, and he will save thee. The admonition that we've seen so many times in the prophets, wait for the Lord. Trust in him. So what I'm suggesting to you here in this section then, from chapter 16 to 22:16, the latter half of Solomon's Proverbs, is that there is an underlying thesis here. Now, there's a lot more that I haven't dealt with, a lot of admonitions that I have not dealt with, but I've tried to draw this out to show you that in and throughout all of this, there is this underlying thesis. The overriding truth is that God is in control. We look at our situation, the man's problem, There's a way that seems right, but it leads to death. Therefore, man cannot trust himself. He cannot trust to his judgment. But there is a God who is judge of what is right and wrong and who searches the hearts of all men. There is a God who is in control of all things and who works all things according to his own good counsel. Now, we have got to get in a right relationship with that God then if we are ever going to live lives that are acceptable. Man can't do it himself, so he must commit himself unto the Lord. He must trust in the Lord, knowing that the Lord alone can atone for his sin and deal with it, that only as he trusts in the Lord and runs to him as running to a refuge in a time of terror and storm, and fears the Lord, trusts him, waits for the Lord, looks to the Lord, only in this can he then escape from the terrible fact that his own judgment and his own sense of right and wrong are perverted by sin. Well, let's move on then to the next major section here in 22:17 through 24. And this is the words of the wise. And it gets the term from the opening words, "Incline thine ear and hear the words of the wise." Now, I have made this a separate section, primarily based on the fact that in 24:23 we have this statement, "These also are of the wise," or sayings of the wise. In other words, it seems to be a supplement to what had just preceded, which would seem to indicate that we do have here a separate, distinct section in the book of Proverbs. And I would denote these as to be understood as separate from the Proverbs of Solomon. Now, this section is marked by a distinct characteristic. Many couplets are to be seen here, two verses that go together. And what is usually found in these couplets is an exhortation followed by either a reason for doing that or the statement of a consequence if you do not do that. And the couplets are so designed then to instruct us, do this because of this, or do this lest this happen. Now, there are several examples of it. Not all of this is involved in couplets, but there are several examples of it. For instance, 22:22 and 23. "Rob not the poor because he is poor, neither oppress the afflicted in the gate. For," the reason, "the Lord will plead their cause and despoil of life those that despoil them." In other words, if you rob the poor, if you oppress the afflicted, the downcast, you are found to be opposing God. Another couplet immediately after in verses 24 and 25 illustrates the other type. "Make no friendship with a man that is given to anger, and with a wrathful man thou shalt not go, lest," hear the warning, "lest thou learn his ways and get a snare to thy soul." Do not be friends with those then that are given to anger and wrathful. This could easily tie in with what we saw a while ago in the comparison of the slow to anger with the hasty to judge. Other couplets will be seen as we move along. Chapter 23, verses 6 and 7 are another one, and 10 and 11. But before we get to those, let's look particularly at 23, 1 to 3. Well, let's pause, and then we'll look at that after we come back.